Well, as you come back into the music room, a little Harlem Nocturne in the background. We heard, I thought with Ruth Wallace you would play a little type of double entendre tune, see? So I gave you an old timer. Every time we do the show, I mention it. And finally, our friend Bob Perry got a hold of it for me, and everybody here knew about Willie Restum.
Yeah.
Right.
At the Dream
Live
Lounge.
Live at the Dream Lounge, 71st and Ocean.
At the Janina Hotel. At the Janina Hotel. This was done September 26, 1959, with Bernie Burns on piano and Vinnie Scott on drums and the 60-Minute Man.
Mm-hmm. Great old blues tune.
And then on the back, he plays the big baritone sax.
Oh, he played
shorts.
Barry.
Barry,
yeah.
And that was in the background, Harlem Nocturne. What can you tell us about it, Charlie? Did you get to see him?
I don't remember seeing him, though.
You knew of him?
I was busy heading the streets.
You were heading...
I was working
with the classical stuff.
It wasn't that. I mean, I handled clubs, too, before. I was with the Grove Playhouse for 28 years, whatever. But I was handling nightclubs along with all that. I was building a career at the time. And what I remember most, I used to work like 2 days in one day. Mm. I would do a day job, go home and have a nap and change my clothes, and then go out and hit the nightclub circuit. I handled Patsy and Bell Barth and the whole group and a lot of clubs at the time. But then I get home at 2 in the morning, have a couple hours sleep.
Collapse.
Until 10 o'clock. But this was an incredible life that I was living.
Tell us more about Bell Barth. She recorded prolifically.
Yeah, Bell was as amazing. If I embarrass you, tell your friends. Right. I mean, she was an amazing performer.
We can't put any of this on the air.
It was Patsy and Bell and Pearl Williams and Ruth Wallace.
That was the
group that all hung out together, and they were friendly rivals. But they were wonderful. Bell Barth was frightening on stage. She was fantastic, really terrifically funny, and but class in her own way. You'd see her in what was then Publix or Food Fair, whatever you had at the time. She'd go shopping during the day with little white gloves, And at
nothing
nighttime,
else, just white gloves. White gloves.
No, she was dressed, Ted.
She was dressed. She was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah, but what was risque then? Today you could do it in front of a kindergarten class.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Now, her place was Bell Barth's Pub, right. 21st Street and Collins
21st
Avenue.
Street. Right, it was right next to Patsy's.
And the proprietor was Buck Gray.
Was he a big producer on Miami Beach? He owned a club. Mm-hmm. He was a club owner.
Well, isn't that where also Pearl Williams?
Pearl Williams used to go in there.
With Lee Soane, the Korean singer.
Lee Soane was with...
S-O-H-N, am I
right?
Oh,
my God,
but Ted,
right, yes.
Ted, Lee Soane was with T.T. Red at the place with the French Place Pigalle on 22nd Street.
Place Pigalle, that's right. Lee Soane.
And, of course, the Miami Beach the Miami Beach branch of the Miami-Dade Public Library is now where the Embers and the Place Pigalle
The Bass, right. And Park Place, all those restaurants. I didn't see these people, Charlie. I was still too young to get in, but I knew of them. Now, there's a name.
Now, was this guy part of that?
Fort Lauderdale.
No, he was a different. He was kind of Key West.
Woody Woodbury.
Wasn't he Fort Lauderdale for years? In Lauderdale.
Yeah, Lauderdale. Yes. But down here too for a while.
He wore a train cap. He had to be smart.
Right.
He did double entendre kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
So he took it.
His was a bar. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, Woody Woodbury's are cool. But Bell was an act, and Patsy, they all had their own
places. They all were old-timers who started out as singers. They didn't make it. They went into comedy. I mean, they could entertain. They did a whole performance for
it. Great.
Now, was this guy part of that club? Frankie Scott.
Not TV, you have to tell people.
Frankie Scott. Was he part of that?
I'm not too familiar.
The undernourished comedian. You're in my act.
Oh, he was very thin. He joked about being thin.
Right, and then you had Charlie. And Charlie Callis.
Charlie Callis.
And when he was down here on Sunny Isles,
he was Charlie
Ducky Callis, and then he got on to It Takes a Thief with Robert Wagner and made his bones there.
Now you're talking getting into Tubby Boots.
Tubby Boots. Oh, boy, he could sing. He did, for all we know, to close his act. It was just... He was really. Otherwise, he wore tassels, here, and he would walk
topless.
And he was at all those motels.
Yeah,
you threatened to talk about Zorita.
I did. Not Zorita was.
I can talk about
Zorita and her snake.
Charlie can talk about Zorita. Charlie can talk
about
Zorita.
Zorita was something else. She was great, gorgeous.
was a stripper, which something burlesque.
No, the burlesque is strippers on 79th Street up around that area.
Well, she was up. Remember, was for years though, she was in Sunny Isles.
Sunny Isles, and but she traveled with that.
She had a snake in her ass. She was a host.
And the question
and
is,
the other one was Mickey Mara, half man, half woman thing.
Well, with Zarita, the question is, and please excuse me, did you handle her?
No.
PR wise.
I would never dare. I was scared of the snake.
She had a snake.
Well, around her neck.
She'd be a big act today with all the pythons, wouldn't she?
She walked her snake down Flagler Street.
She wore a snake.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
she
all,
literally did
snake.
That. She wow. walked her snake down Flagler Street. But I wish I handled a PR, but I didn't dare.
Her name probably was Shirley Goldberg, you know.
Right.
But I want to play for you. I'd like to play for you this the selection that this man, the recording was not made here, but the man had connection down here. And among, he didn't have many commercial hits, but commercially he was known for this tune. Okay.
Surprise filled Nina's eyes. She did not understand when I kissed her hand. Why dreams begin to stir deep down inside of her. When I whispered things that Nina never heard.
Nina's heart took wings.
With every tender word, then suddenly she clung to me.
She learned to love somehow.
And I'm so glad that Nina never knew till now.
Okay, Nina never knew. Now,
I'm trying to connect with it. I'm not really.
Well, unless you knew it was his hit. It's Joe Mooney.
Oh.
Are you familiar with Joe Mooney?
He played a couple of clubs.
He played at The Great.
At The Great. Well, that's the name. I couldn't remember. That was Teddy Goldstein's place.
Well, The Great, right by the bridge over Washington Avenue and Dade Boulevard.
No, The Great was...
And The Flame, they showed The Flame in the restaurant.
The Great was Teddy Goldstein's place, and The Night Owl was right next door.
So
that was the jazz
Joe Mooney was sightless.
Yeah.
Started as a piano player, then accordion, and could sing, and it was a cult type of singer, cult. But he recorded this tune with, usually played with his own group, with the Sorta Finnegan Orchestra. Sorta Finnegan had a unique orchestra for a while. And lo and behold, it became a hit. If you say to the general people who knew jazz, Joe Mooney, they'd say, Nina never knew. And it was recorded November 3, 1952 in New York. And I won't mention who's in the band, a lot of people, but there is Joe Mooney. And I remember seeing the name on the grate that had that flame type of neon sign, right? And Joe Mooney, which is a jazz late night type of club singer. So there you go. Does it sound familiar? The Great, you would know, of
course. The Great
course,
is where they
that,
were.
That whole area from 21st to 23rd.
Yeah, it was a club.
Right, that was the Tenderloin. It was wonderful. And then, of course, you had the Roman Pools, which by that time had become the Everglades Cabana Club, but it started out as Carl Fisher's Casino on the south east corner of 23rd and Collins. That was where the windmill was, and people remember it by the fact that they had the windmill, and all the pictures show the windmill there. What a wonderful, I mean, it was just, and, you know, Charlie says that was a great time to grow
like
up
I
here.
I said, you know, and I was young, and you were too young to get into a lot of those clubs.
Well,
you
were, some of these things happened before I got here.
Yes, but they were here while you were here, Charlie.
They were wonderful days.
But and I remember down that block, there was Bill Jordan's Bar of Music.
Right.
You know, that's, but then nightclubs.
And Sleepy Time Gal at the Seagull Hotel.
Right. Oh, you mean on the radio?
On the radio.
I listen to Sleepy
midnight.
Time.
And you know who's still around? You mentioned Bill Jordan's. Our friends from the Vintnoy bought it, but you know who's still around? Connie Gordon, the great
artist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, Ted, she's 90 years old, and it's like she's 54. Sharp as a tack, wonderful, great sense of humor, just a wonderful, wonderful lady.
They live right, these people. I guess that's what it is, right?
Well,
they live right.
You didn't smoke. It helped.
It does help. Yeah, the my train of thought, no, we're talking about Bill Jordan, and who else?
Well, if you remember Sleepy Time Gal.
Oh, Sleepy Time. Now,
remember
as a kid.
Well, she was a big Tony Martin fan. Remember?
Yeah, of course
she
I know Tony.
Did all her Tony Martin.
You know, when the world opened up to me, as a gift, when I went into the seventh grade, my folks bought me a clock radio. So I had to get up to go to school. And I'm staying up all night, and I'm listening to radio. And Sleepy Time Gal would come on. And that's I always said, overnights, anytime past midnight to 5 in the morning, you need a very Julie London type of speaking
right.
to do radio. They could play Mary Had a Little Lemonade. So you just listen to them talk.
She was wonderful.
And she would do this. And what was her name? Do you know her actual name?
Faith something.
And she said, and she'd come on, Ed, real sexy. And this, it would be very corny. This is Sleepy Time. And naturally, she used Sleepy Time Gal as her theme.
And she had this big thing for Tony Martin. I'm going to tell you something that's really going to rock you all. I was Sleepy Time's date. Sleepy Time Gal's date.
Let me put the mic on for this. Wait.
I was her date for the opening of Waiting for Godot at the Coconut Grove Playhouse.
That's what opened up the Grove.
Right.
Wow.
Not bad. Sleepy Time with Waiting for Godot.
I was her date. Mm-hmm.
And nobody looked at you, right, Charlie?
No.
Faith,
but
you
know, I made a stay because the show was a big bomb here, which became one of the greatest shows in the world. By a great playwright.
And it shows you the effect there that he had. I said, what's her name? You can't remember her name?
Faith.
Okay, Faith was a...
Faith.
You know, it sounded,
what station was she on? Do you remember?
No.
I used to listen to Art Green. You remember Art Green?
Art Green, yeah.
Art Green, years ago in New York, was one of those along the long line that did make-believe ballroom. And then he came down here. And I had him on the show. In his later years... Where Cedars of Lebanon is now, it used to be like an assisted living type of place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was with the Great Panthers. He was a big lobbyist in Tallahassee for the seniors. And he would do a disc jockey on KAT, WKAT, which was the CBS affiliate here. And I wanted to do it. I've never had the guts yet. Every July 4th show, he would do a total Christmas show for those people who are going to drink and drive and won't be here for Christmas the coming year.
I love it.
Oh. And he would all these Christmas songs and a whole. You think you woke up? Maybe you overslept. Every year he did that.
You know, if we're talking about these folks, we need to talk about Jerry Wichner.
Oh yeah,
because Jerry was on. Remember, I was his single most frequent guest. The phones were because we talk about history. And
you talk about his talk show when he was a disc jockey.
His talk show.
He followed Neil Rogers.
He was just great. I mean, Jerry was wonderful. We go on at 11 o'clock at night, and I'd stay with him till 5 in the morning.
WIOD?
No. This was INZ.
And FUN. He had the gun right on the table.
Oh, yeah. When we left, he walked out with the gun ready. Wow. Jerry was a character, but a great guy. Great guy.
And he wore this wig, you know, that really. Yeah. But he was a very top disc jockey when I was in high school for WINZ. Mm-hmm. And he would go to the dances, you know, and do things. Sounded like Arthur Godfrey many times. All right, Ed. Yeah. I'll end up something. And I want to know, Seth, particularly, I think I've asked you this before. I think a caller called in one time and said he knew where it was. I want to know the venue of where this is coming from. Okay? Are you ready? Here we go.
The Coca-Cola Company presents the Victory Parade of Spotlight Bands tonight, playing from Miami, Florida. And here's tonight's Spotlight Roll Call. Les Brown.
Here.
The Les Brown Spotlight Band.
Here.
The officers and men of the 36th Street Army Air Base.
Here.
And tonight's first Spotlight tune, OK for Baby, right about here.
Australian contrasting music.
From the Frolics Club in Miami, Florida, it's the music of that saxophone stylist, Jimmy Dorsey, and his orchestra.
Now, a little extra work for trombonist Cy Zentner as Jimmy Dorsey and the orchestra play Together.
Thank you.
Okay. Here we go.
Start us.
Wow. Home.
Okay, we opened up with Les Brown, the Coca-Cola Spotlight Bands. We had to bring some of these military things. It's Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And we always celebrate it here musically on the train, not forgetting the meaning of the holiday, of course. And Spotlight Band shows, the two versions. They were on three times a week, I think, and it was on Mutual mainly, around the country. Sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes half hour. And they would go into military installations, hospitals, civilian areas, and then sponsored by Coke. And then they would do it without the commercials for Armed Forces Radio and play it for the troops. So this was the Coca-Cola Victory Parade of Spotlight Bands, August 10th, 1943. And it says here, Seth, the 36th Street Army Air Base in Miami. Now, if we want to recall, before 1959-60, the airport, you went down 36th Street and you turned into the airlines that you wanted, whatever label. You didn't go up Lejeune and into the
airport. That was before Miami International Airport.
No, it was international then.
Oh. No, I'm just saying it was before
before that they redid it and opened it up in 60 with Lejeune Road entrance.
Mm.
And somebody told me it's where the old Eastern Airlines hangar used to be on 36th Street.
No, they had an installation.
What was there? Talk to me,
Seth. What they called it, there were two facilities there. There was NAS Miami and Miami International Airport Depot, MIAD, where the airport is now. Now, you got to understand that the north runway and the south runway were divided by the seaboard railroad yards, were right in the middle of the two runways. And then later, the what was called then the Port Authority made a trade. They got the seaboard to move their yard up to where it is now, just north of 79th Street, 37th Avenue, and then they got the land between the runways. But you had two airports actually operating there for a while. One was called the 20th Street Airport, and that was where what they call the non-scheduled airlines went out of. And then you had 36th Street, which was Eastern National Delta Pan Am,
right?
The big scheduled airlines. But remember that Opa-locka, at one time, the original Miami airport was actually in Opa-locka before they moved down to the 36th Street area.
But this Army Air Station on 36, where do you think it was? Was it by where the Eastern hangars were then?
No, I think it was on the other side.
Across the street on 36?
Yeah, because that was the MIAD, Miami International, what they called MIAD.
But you know, the military came in and took over and did things.
Right, but see, what everybody forgets, Ted, is that while the U.S. Army Air Corps / Air Force, which was part of the Army, took over Miami Beach. But everybody forgets that the Navy and the Coast Guard did the same thing on the Miami side.
Aren't you doing one of the latest books you're doing on that?
Our dear friend Russell Galbert is backing our History of Greater Miami During World War II, Training the Troops in Sun and Sand. But that's in queue. That's in the line because Kobe Karp, our other very good friend, is backing Beach is Dynamite, the History of Miami Beach High. And then there's other things that are coming up, including Florida East Coast Railway passenger trains and stations, so we can tie that in with the coming of the All Aboard Florida trains.
But you want to do the one about the Navy and the Miami side. Everybody knows about the Air Force on the beach.
Right. This is going to be History of Greater Miami during World War II.
Okay.
So we'll go from
the whole area.
The blimp base and the Prisoner of War Camp down at Richmond, 152nd Street and Homestead, and we'll cover the Prisoner of War Camp at Belhaven, Northwest 79th Street and 32nd Avenue.
Right.
We'll cover everything up in Opa-locka. We'll cover what became Bal Harbour was not a prisoner of war camp.
But they worked there, though, didn't they?
Yes, they worked
with
there.
The shopping centers.
They were brought in from Belhaven, and that was an officer's quarters. And then, of course, Miami Beach was basically taken over completely.
Hmm. Saved
Can't
the
wait to read that.
The beach.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Ed, and then you had...
We featured for you Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra, recorded July 18th, 1944, from the Frolics Club. And Seth tells us that was where? 13th?
Northeast 13th Street and Biscayne Boulevard.
Tell us anything else about the Frolics.
The Frolics
Big
Club,
small?
The Frolics Club was one of the great burlesque clubs.
Ooh.
And they all had, kind of seedy reputations. Probably the worst of them all was the Place Pigalle, though, because the Miami Beach police had to assign a full-time officer there because the bar girls,
right,
would tell the customers, well, yes, honey, we can do something. Come meet me in the alley after the show.
Oh.
And they wouldn't be met by the girls. They'd be met by a couple
by Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
But this is on 13th and Biscayne, you said.
Yes,
and
sir.
This is a strip club, you said?
It was a burlesque club, yeah.
Probably after this, though. Why would a big band of Dorsey's stature come and play in a strip club?
1944,
because remember that in World War II, that one of the great, and it's covered in my L'Chaim, the history of the Jewish community of Greater Miami, Madame Sherry had the largest and finest whorehouse. Am I allowed to say that on the air, as Neil used to say?
Absolutely. It's a Broadway play.
It's almost midnight.
Had it on... It was on 54th Street, just west of the FEC tracks, torn down, and then the Army closed it up at World War II. Remember, the Army, their word was law, and so, or the Navy or the Coast Guard.
Right.
And so what they may have done is taken over the clubs and said, you're going to use this for military events.
Okay. So that's why, because
yes, sir.
Normally you wouldn't see a big band going to just a strip club.
Right.
Sure.
13th, you say, and Biscayne.
Northeast 13th and Biscayne.
Well, we're here on 15th Street, two
right.
blocks
well, 15th,
from Biscayne.
15th is the entrance to the Venetian. Was the entrance to the, then the County Causeway, which became after World War II the MacArthur.
Right, exactly. And so down two blocks... I mean, farther down, the only club I remember as a kid was the Clover Club, right, Charlie? Remember
that?
That was the Clover Club.
That's what I'm trying to think
I'm
of.
I'm talking about, I remember the Clover Club where Lena Horne worked.
The Vagabonds?
Wow. No.
They were there all
Yeah, but that was a separate club.
Lena Horne played the, when I first came down here, I saw Lena Horne.
Come closer to the mic and tell me. I love Lena Horne. Just
no,
love.
She was amazing.
Who doesn't?
Beautiful woman,
incredible,
right? I saw
incredible
one time.
Performer. Amazing
stands at the mic and stares at you and sings.
Wild.
Beautiful.
Unbelievable.
But the Clover, I mean, the Clover Club, I'm thinking of the one, right? Where the Vagabonds were the house band.
The Vagabonds was down about 7th or 8th and Biscayne.
Right.
Somewhere down there.
And you know, at one time they had CDs of their material, and then I didn't take it. I got to get it.
Ted.
They did that number about salt. Have I got salt?
Yeah.
The Vagabonds.
Ted, I said it was down about 7th or 8th and Biscayne, and Ed just showed me the ad, 732 Biscayne Boulevard.
This is your ads. Ed has these billboards for everything, folks, if we had TV.
Right.
He saves everything.
I save everything.
Everything.
How'd you get them all?
Just extensive looking over 20 years into every old newspaper I could find.
Oh, my God.
And the search continues. Anybody with old newspapers, don't throw them out. Send them to me.
Yeah.
Call me at 305-995-2236.
It's not with my side of the family now. You know, we had panoramas.
Panoramas are magnificent.
Charlie, I don't have them.
Magnificent.
Panorama.
Tourist magazine.
I'm already saying things the first hour. Charlie's giving me the looks like I'm 95 here, you know?
Well, I remember
those things, Charlie. I remember.
I've only found two copies of Panorama.
Tell everybody. Well, that's because you haven't come to the Bramson Archive. Tell everybody what Panorama was.
It was a rotor review.
Right. Well, right. Well, today.
Is that a word for Sunday?
Yeah, except nobody's going to remember what it was. Most people today are aware of Ware magazine, which the Kaplan family still publishes. Yeah. Wonderful. Do a great job. But the Panorama came out weekly, and it was always a great thing to be in Panorama because they went to all the clubs, the restaurants, they took people's pictures, and, you know, they had the gossip
they
and the news.
They showed who's at this table, who's
right.
And it was always a glossy paper in a very sepia
tone. Sepia tone.
Walter Winchell wrote a column in there, I believe.
I don't think in Panorama. No,
if he did,
Panorama.
It was a guest author. Because he would
maybe it was a guest.
They couldn't afford
no.
Winchell.
But they had columns from Vegas. In the one I have, there's a column from Vegas.
It's very
and one from Havana.
Yeah, the owner
it's
who owned it
one
had
from Havana.
Some connections in Vegas.
Are we stirring your memories, Charlie?
Yeah, we're beginning to, because I was a child then.
Well, we were in the same bar mitzvah class.
Yeah, we're in the same bar mitzvah class.
And there you go. St. Pat's, just to make it a little bit.
I've got a question here.
Yes.
Now, we're talking about the Vagabonds. They were real big.
Oh, they were great.
Apparently.
Arthur Godfrey did a big thing.
Well, I've got some info about the Arthur Godfrey Room, and they were the featured band, were they not?
Yeah, for years. You were talking about at the Clover Club.
Was that Arthur Godfrey's room?
No, I don't think so. His room had to be at the Kenilworth.
Right,
nobody else would call it the Arthur Godfrey Room, but his own place for obvious reasons.
Right.
Yes. What about Birdland?
Hank Meyer never lived that down, did he? With Arthur Godfrey, he defended Arthur Godfrey the whole time.
Well, wait. There's more to the story, though.
Fill us in.
Should we tell people why?
Yes. I've got the photos that came from Pete Chase's collection. Pete Chase was Carl Fisher's right hand man. And Pete Chase was the founder of the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce, was active in a lot of things here for many years. And when Pete passed away, our friend, and I hope Charlie's friend, Bob Levy, managed to glom up all of Pete Chase's great photos going back to Carl Fisher and turn them over to me. So why do I mention that? Because your question was, give me your question again.
Well, you know, Hank Myers,
right?
Godfrey, there's stories about anti-Semitism, the Kenilworth, and how he was. Right. And Hank Myers offended him and it's his friend.
Well, let me, right,
and they made it off the Godfrey Road, and to these day old timers, it's still 41st.
Right.
It,
but let me answer why. There are pictures when they named it, Charlie, and I don't know if you've seen it. I've got one of the pictures in the Sunshine Stone Crabs and Cheesecake book. When you look at the picture, who's there? Baron de Hirschmeier, Mount Sinai Hospital,
right,
and several other people big in the Jewish community. There is no question, no matter who tries to deny it, that Godfrey was an anti-Semite. And people said, but Seth, he had Jewish publicists. Wait a minute. If that's true, then when he took over the Kenilworth, then why didn't he do away with the anti-Semitic no-Jews policy? He didn't. But the fact of the matter was that remember that in 1952, 53, 54, he's sitting in back of the Kenilworth, and nobody knew from Bal Harbour. They called it Miami Beach. And here he is on national TV, December, January, and he's plucking his guitar, and
he's in ukulele.
He's in shorts. He's in a Hawaiian
he's
shirt.
He's selling the beach.
And
like
he is selling the beach, the likes of which you cannot even imagine.
I remember that.
And so they figured that they needed to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's you can understand that even given –
necessary evil, is that what you would say?
Basically. I know that the anti-Semitism, in my L'chaim, mention it clearly.
Gottfried was using that.
Did you meet him, Charlie, at all? Did you ever meet him or see him?
I never met him.
No, but I clearly state that he was an anti-Semite in the L'chaim book, clearly stated that he was. And in the 33154.
Whatever happened, he could have died. He was one of the biggest radio personalities ever.
And television.
If you could advertise with him, you sold.
Right.
Died a very bitter, lonely man. Hmm. So it's karma, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Anybody know any stories about South Florida's Miami Beach's Birdland, Jazz Corner of the World at 22nd and Park, Miami Beach?
Well, that's where everything, that was another Teddy Goldstein thing.
That was another Teddy Goldstein thing?
They were all in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Miami City Ballet Company is now is where all this was going on.
Mm.
There was club, it was just a circle of clubs, one on top of the other.
Candido
and
played there.
Candido.
Yes, Candido.
Candido absolutely played there. He played at the Great.
Mm-hmm.
He was there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
El Chico was on the northwest corner of 22nd and Park.
Right.
The Park Avenue was on the northeast corner.
Right.
You had the, as we talked about, Fan and Bill's and Wolfie's on 23rd Street.
Exactly.
Al Nemitz had his place on 23rd Street.
Right.
Al later became the general manager of the pubs. But it was
Embers
fantastic.
Was too,
and the Embers was on 22nd on the north side
Sam
of the street.
Sam Sterling.
Well, Duke Sterling was a – you listen to Mario and you get these stories about Duke Sterling. And, God, what a character Duke was. And then he sold it to Radio Weiner. And
who
then,
had the bonfire.
Well, what he did, Radio sold the Embers to our good friend Walter Kaplan. Mm. And Walter's brother, Saul, was one of my great – and when I was in the – food and beverage business was one of my great mentors, along with Wolfie, believe it or not, and he was a lovely guy. And Walter was very successful because he didn't change anything.
What a great name, Radio, huh? Well, we got to get to the music, but you know, Charlie, if you remember, and Seth, for years, even though we were the gateway to Cuba and it was easy traveling, you know, people would come here, Ed, spend 2 or 3 days gambling in Havana, come back to Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't the real Latin music. I remember two names, Charlie. Mandy and Poopy Campo.
I remember them, too. I worked with Mandy. He was the band at the Empress Hotel.
Married Betty Clooney, right?
Right.
And Rosie's sister.
Mandy. Poopy was the one that went out with Ben Novak's wife, which created its own scandal at the time.
Oh, see what goes. We're all around again.
That's when Poopy lost his job. He woke up not feeling too well.
Right. That's hold on.
Very tactful.
I want to get. And these are when the Cuban musicians, every American would picture, they wore those big fluffy sleeves from the wrist to the shoulder, you know. And that's what people. But if you looked in the papers, all you saw, Poopy and Mandy Campo, or individually, no other Latin music.
Hmm.
And I guess we always had...
But it was a Latin craze. Everybody was dancing the music.
Well, the big craze was in New York, the Mambo craze. The Mambo. That's when Tito Puente and Cal... The real hot stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back...
Campo and his Rumbaliers.
Yes.
And Mandy married Betty.
At the 5 o'clock club as well, but that was at the Fountain Blue?
No, 5 o'clock club was down
Five
on
o'clock was,
19th and Collins.
Yeah, it was Martha,
22nd and Collins.
Martha Ray's.
Well, it was between 21st and
22nd. Martha Ray. Martha Ray had the club. Yeah. Big picture
way,
of Martha Ray.
Well, that was later. Martha had it later.
And then came our girl, Evelyn West, and a treasure chest. and they'd advertise, how they show it. That show this big buxom picture of her, but she's got this big, like, pirate chest with jewels opened up. You know?
Excuse me. It was Evelyn West and her $50,000 treasure chest.
Ooh.
Insured for $50,000.
$25,000 aside. It was insured. You know, well, the horses, you insure their legs, right?
Yes, indeed.
And
Betty Grable.
She faded out in the West. Well, anyway, I'm going to play for you I'm going to play a piggyback for you, not long numbers, and we're going to all tie it into our discussion. All right? Let us start.
Thank you. everything. You know you can't just rush into that old black magic.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. I see fingers running down my spine. Same old witchcraft when those eyes meet mine. Same old tingle that I feel inside. Then the elevator starts to ride. Down, down I go. All around I go like a leaf caught in the tide. I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear that name and I'm aflame with such a burning desire. Why only that kiss, 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 kiss can put out the fire, Señor. The lover that I've been waiting for, the maid that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, darling, down, down I go. All around I go in a spin. Ooh, how I love the spin that I'm in. Ah, under that old black magic called love. I should stay away, but tell me what can I do? I hear that name and I'm aflame. Aflame with such a burning desire. Why only that kiss, 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 kiss can put out the fire, Señor. The lover that I've been waiting for, the maid that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, darling, down, down, down I go. All around I go in a spin. Ooh, how I love the spin that I'm in. Under that old black magic called love. We under that old black magic called love.
Sing this song, ooh, man! Sing this song!
Under that old black magic called love. Under that old
black magic called love. Now, just how much of this you really think we can stand?
We under that old black magic
called love. Well, let's put out the lights and call.
Under that old black magic called love. Ooh, under that old
somebody come get me before I do something real bad.
Under that old black magic called love.
All right, here we go. Now, Old Black Magic. First, we played it with Dorothy Donegan, who, if you really listen to Dorothy Donegan, seriously, you'll find she's probably the greatest of all women pianists, although people would argue Mick Partland, probably, but au contraire. This was at the Embers, and they never in New York, the famous Embers. They never give who's in a group. 1957, Capitol. And lo and behold, my dear friend here, our co-host, Mr. Bell, knows how I like Dorothy Donegan, and he comes out, Charlie, with a bill, a club bill, from the Sanssouci Hotel, the Blue Sails Room. Call Maurice. Do you remember Maurice? Or, you know, no. But there's a mistake here, and I don't know if you know this. It says, opening tonight, Dorothy Dandridge. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Dorothy Dandridge.
Dandridge, yeah.
Not Donegan.
Sorry about
it's
that.
It's right. Salt love Dorothy Dandridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know? I'm happy we did this. Did you know her?
I never met her, but she was a great singer.
Oh, she was wonderful.
She became a movie star. She did Pauline Best. Mm-hmm.
She also performed at 17 years old in the Glenn Miller movie, Sun Valley Serenade, Dance with the Nicholas Brothers, and that's how she got to meet one and married him and made the biggest mistake of her life because it became very abusive. But anyway, she's singing with Sacasas and his famous Latin American band.
Where was the Sanssouci?
31st and Collins.
And Maurice was the Maurice who went to the Fontainebleau.
See, somebody would know Maurice.
As the maitre d'.
They don't know Dorothy, but they know Maurice. Charlie, what would a cover charge be then in those years at a club like this in the 50s? That's the man to know. He never paid. And, of course, the famous rendition of Black Magic.
Billy Daniels.
You know, the song was 30 years before then. I mean, Rodgers and Hart wrote it, but Arlen and Mercer. But he first recorded this in 1947 with Jerry Jerome's orchestra, but it became a hit again in 1951, Russ Case, Benny Payne on piano. And he used to wave, remember he would move around his hands and snap his, did you ever see him perform down here? Was he down here?
Yeah, sure, a lot. He played the Causeway.
When you say
79th Street, which was, we called the Causeway at the time, where the Bonfire was and other clubs along that place. Yeah. 79th Street was a hot place to go.
I keep thinking of Dade Causeway.
And it was a jazz, there was a jazz club there too.
There was?
Right behind the Bonfire, if I remember.
What was the name of the restaurant that was on a big boat?
That was the Seven Seas.
The Seven Seas.
Right. I remember the Seven Seas in Miami.
That was Tony, can't think of Tony's last name because it was at the same time I was in the restaurant business. Tony. Yeah, no. it was the Seven Seas was the name of the boat.
Don't you remember the Seven Seas rest? You mean on the Causeway by Channel 7?
Yeah. No.
Well,
no.
On the 79th Street.
The boat was at the east end of North Bay Village, where that disgusting high rise is now. It looks like a concrete block, but that's where the Seven Seas was.
Do you remember the Royal and Embassy Theater on Miami?
Vaguely.
Where is it? Second Avenue just dead, comes in, it's one street. There was a Seven Seas restaurant there for years.
Yeah, well, the Seven Seas eventually, that was downtown, moved out to Red Road.
Okay, you remember that one? The windows made it look like portholes.
Sure,
boats.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that's
we've
great.
Got photos and
fresh
postcards
fish.
Of that.
Sure. Right across the street from the Gilbert Hall of Science store, where you could see erector sets.
You're talking about Jan the Magic Man. That was the Gilbert Hall of Science on Southeast 3rd Avenue, just east of Flagler, just south of Flagler Street.
Exactly. And if you went up Flagler, Sloppy Joe's. We had a Sloppy Joe's here.
Yes,
did you
we
know
did.
That, Ed?
Yes, we did.
There you go.
Sans Hemingway.
There was a jazz singer that worked 79th Street who, unfortunately...
Myrtle Jones?
No, it wasn't Myrtle, although I remember... Myrtle was fantastic.
Tell us, you know, Ed, we were trying to get...
No, Myrtle Jones was amazing pianist singer.
Wonderful. We're trying to get recordings of her, Charlie.
She played the Bonfire all the time.
We can get recordings of her,
Charlie.
They all made local
recordings. She was there for years.
And when I spoke to her, I was on when she couldn't do my show, but she was on Sunday nights. We always talk about Myrtle Jones.
There was a singer, Kathy, a young girl, who unfortunately committed suicide. I remember... That played the Bonfire. It was a jazz singer.
Kathy.
Terrific.
Kathy
singer.
Or Phyllis?
No, it wasn't Phyllis Hyman. That wasn't Phyllis Hyman, was it?
No.
Okay.
I remember Phyllis Hyman, though.
Yeah.
She blew her life away.
Yeah.
She was so good.
But had some tremendous years here in
the 70s.
And
she was a sweet gal, too.
Yeah, lovely lady.
Very heavily into doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, now we're getting down to the brass tacks, as they say. So Billy Daniels, I think I saw her... ads of him or pictures in front of the Beachcomber? 79th Street, Dade Boulevard, there was two clubs, right? The Beachcomber, Copa City.
Copa City, that was...
Cam Calloway always played the Copa City.
Sophie Tucker played there, too.
Sammy Davis. And then they had to go to Miami to live, as they couldn't live on the beach.
That's right.
Well, for a while. There's a lot of different stories with that whole thing with the... as to when it happened. You know, a lot of people give Dave Levinson at the Algiers credit for being the first one to break the color line, but as vile a human being as he was, I'm not sure it wasn't Ben Novak who broke the color line, Charlie, because Frank, and forgive me for using just first name, but I worked at the Fontainebleau for 4 years when Sinatra played there, but Frank told Novak, he said, this man either stays here...
Or I don't come.
Meaning Sammy Davis?
Sammy.
But that's not the middle 50s or the late 40s when I'm talking about the club.
No, right.
And those clubs became the Newman Gordon Funeral Home later on. That's how I remember, right? But they're the club... Because clubs went out, you know, hotels took over, and then no more hotels, you know, you didn't have stuff like that anymore. They went out of business.
I gotta tell you, you mentioned my dear friend Ed Newman. The funeral home.
Cool.
And when Ed was ready to close down, he called me and he said, Seth, come down and you can take all the stuff.
Oh.
And there was memorabilia
there.
So how
many caskets did you take?
No caskets.
Did you take salesman samples that weren't the fortune?
Salesman slips.
You watch the road show, take salesman samples.
It was great stuff. And then, of course, there was Mother Kelly's. Right on the corner of West Avenue and
Dade Boulevard.
Dade Boulevard.
It was a big club.
Oh, fabulous.
Mother Kelly's, the Triangle Building.
Wasn't a hotel. Mother Kelly's was a bar and restaurant.
Right, but wasn't that building a hotel?
No, no. You're thinking of the Boulevard Hotel, which was further east on Dade Boulevard. And that's where the wonderful Gray's Inn was, right there. But, it was just like Charlie said. I mean, you're talking about a town that was just, you've got tremendous clubs now, but a different kind of club.
It's different.
And when you walk into the so-called clubs today, you can't hear yourself think, much less talk.
Today, the younger people today, when they're going to be seniors, they're going to lament the years they were here, two on the beach, the way it was. That's the way it is.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm just going to jump in for a second, because I'm going to tell you that Mayor Levine and City Manager Morales, I'm telling you, their vision for this city is going to return it to the greatness that we did lose for several years, even with Art Deco being so positive. I mean, let's face it. And I was at Barbara's side along with Cookie Major.
Barbara Kappenman.
The whole time. And Cookie Major, who never gets any credit because you have other people who want to jump in and take the credit. I'm not talking about Leonard Horowitz and her sons. I don't mean them. I'm talking about, as Neil Rogers used to love to say, the front-running phonies. Mm-hmm. And Cookie Major, who's now in Asheville, North Carolina, she was right there with Barbara every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't get any credit at all because the front-running phonies love to jump in and take it.
Okay, we're going to come up to break. So, Ed, set us up for this number.
Well, you were talking about blacks playing on Miami Beach and then not being permitted to stay there until Frank broke the color barrier with Sammy Davis. Either you give him a room or I'm out of here. Very brave. Let's play a tune that Ted originally turned me on to by the wonderful jazz writer and saxophonist Benny Golson. This is from 1954, and he would travel from Overtown, cross the Venetian Causeway, to go to his gig on Miami Beach and then come back. And that's when the real music began in Overtown. But he wrote this wonderful tune called Venetian Breeze.
He couldn't get over the Venetian Causeway with the palm trees and the water and the homes. So he wrote this. It's called Venetian Breeze.
It screams for lyrics. Thank you.
Till you belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Why do bees like roses?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain to see.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey, you're the one for me. Now the cows in the field go moo, 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 and the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo, and I'll keep right after you. Will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Why do bees like roses?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey. You're the one for me.
The cows in the field go moo, moo, moo. And the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo. And I'll keep right after you.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Oh, well, look at you, her mama. What you gonna say?
Oh, well, I gotta get up and go to work today.
Oh, well, I'll go down and put the coffee on.
Oh, well, hurry up, Papa, cause I should have been gone.
Mama, put your britches on. Mama, put your britches on. You've got a key job for defense. Mama, put your britches on. Friday, take along a big lunch, too. Take along a big lunch, too. That diet now just don't make sense. You've got heavy work to do. Riches may vex too tight and may not look as fine. No time for sex ain't right on that assembly line. But da-da-da-da, put away the fancy hose and your dainty these and those. What you need now is victory clothes. Mama, put your britches on. Oh, yeah, put the bridges on. Oh, her mama put them on. Mama put them on.
Mama, put your britches on. Mama, put your britches on.
You got a key job for a living. So mama, put your britches on.
Take along a big lunch, too. Take along a big lunch, too.
Baby, that diet now just don't make sense. You got heavy work to do.
Britches may vex too tight and may not look as fine. No time for sex ain't right on that assembly line.
Put away your fancy hose and your dainty these and those. What you need now is victory clothes. So mama, oh mama, mama, put your britches on.
Come on, mama, let's go to work.
Your eyes don't shine like they used to shine, and the thrill is gone when your lips meet mine. I'm afraid the masquerade is over, and so is love. And so is love. Your words don't mean what they used to mean. They were once inspired, but now they're just routine. I'm afraid the masquerade is over, and so is love, and so is love. I guess I'll have to play Pagliacci and get myself a clown's disguise, then learn how to laugh like Pagliacci with tears in my eyes. You look the same. Oh, you're a lot the same. But my heart says no. No, you're not the same. And so is love, and so is love.
All right, gentlemen, here we are in the air. The first, these were very early groups that were between rock and R&B. They were always black groups, you know. The famous one is Louis Jordan, the Timpani Five. The Traineers.
Traineers, I remember.
Come to the mic, Charlie. That's the Traineers.
I remember Traineers, yeah. They performed. They were great. They were great.
They went to Newport brothers, for years. Yeah. Were brothers. Mm-hmm. They were twins.
Yeah.
Not at the Newport.
Were they at the Newport Fields? No. Where were they? Come on, Seth,
no,
you know.
No, I can't. Yeah, but I can't remember where the Traineers were. But it wasn't the Newport because I was assistant manager of the hotel at the Seven Seas. But the Traineers were not there.
But they weren't Sunny Isles, were they?
Sunny Isles, but I don't remember
they
where.
They were at one venue for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Traineers were actually, you know, the original Traineers sang with Jimmy Lunsford, Milt Traineer, and he had twins. And the Traineers that we know in the R&B are his sons, which is Cliff and Claude. And this was recorded. What did I play for you? I think we played. Sure Had a Wonderful Time. No, what was
no,
the.
No, no. We played.
Not Put Your Britches On. That was the other
one. No.
Isn't it great when you do a show, you don't know what you're playing?
No, I know what it was, though.
I think we played Sure Had a Wonderful. No, Everybody Get Together?
No.
Whatever it was. Oh, Look at Here, Ain't She Pretty? And it was.
So it was love, but you know.
January 1947. No, I'm talking about the first group, not the girls.
Oh, the first group. Oh.
That's with Gene Gelbo's quartet. Don Hill on alto and Gene Gelbo bass. They never have all the musicians. The record companies never listed these guys, you know, never gave them credit.
Yeah.
Now, the second group, gentlemen, will lead to my singer, Steve Gibson. Steve Gibson and the Redcaps. Now, the first two we heard, Mama Put Your Britches On, is just Steve Gibson with the group. But I always tell this story. My mother went with my folks, my aunt and uncle, they went out to Ciro's. And she comes back and the next day she tells me, you know, we saw this group, Steve Gibson and the Redcaps. They all dyed their hair red. But she said the girl singer that they had with the group, remember her name, she's going to be big, Demita Jo.
Oh, Demita Jo.
And that's who we heard, Demita Jo, live from the Diplomat.
Wow.
Singing This Masquerade Is Over in the early 60s. But she got started. She didn't get started, but she had a big break with Steve Gibson. Imagine that, starting and with this group, and they all dyed their hair red. But Steve Gibson and the Redcaps is another one of those groups that's famous. Mm-hmm. And they were at Ciro's, which became a food fair, right, later on? And then,
yeah.
So George Foster is the MC, Van Smith's orchestra, Demita Jo's rhythm sections and instrumentalists, Curtis Wilder on bass, Albert Daly keyboards. She had two drummers. No, she had Lou Mallon on drums and Bobby Bryan on trumpet, who later on worked with Della Reese for years.
Uh-huh.
And it was arranged by Lon Norman, Fred Norman, Gillespie, Marty Glynn. Anyway, live at the Dip in the early 60s.
Yeah.
Did you know Demita Jo?
No.
You knew of her?
I knew of her, of course. Yeah. We knew everything. The Dip was great with the Cowans, or Irving and Marge Cowan.
Which, of course, is Food Fair family. Isn't that funny? I mentioned Food Fair, Seth. Yeah. Yeah. And the Diplomat has a rebirth.
The Diplomat was a fantastic place.
Well, Irving was involved with the Shelburne Hotel with Russell Galbert. And In and Out, and what a lovely man he is. He's a real great.
I saw him about a year or two.
Did you? Yeah. Well, you know, his wife Margie, of course, passed away, but now he's been going with a gal from Beach High who was a friend of ours, and her name is Margie. So it's, yeah.
It's great to see him.
Oh, he's a very sweet natured, very pleasant man.
He doesn't
man.
Have to change the towels in the bathroom.
Not anymore.
That's how you start. You
but
work
you know,
your way
he,
up.
He started as Cohen, changed the name to Cowan.
Yeah, but the Diplomat was a class act.
Well, it was the only fancy hotel after you left the beach.
Right.
Bal Harbour didn't have any. I mean, then, and nothing. Sunny Isles didn't have. They were family motels. And then all of a sudden comes this competition to the Rock and to the Americana and to the Fountain Blue.
Yeah.
Charlie, were you around for the Beatles at the Diplomat?
I knew they were there, but I was not. I didn't connect with them, and I was very busy at that time. I mean, my really career was working at the Playhouse.
Yes,
the other things,
Cook and Grow Playhouse.
I mean, because when I worked with Zev Buffman, he gave me license to do whatever I wanted to do.
Was it Zev that brought in "Ain't Misbehavin'"?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I was their sound man.
Yeah.
You know,
really?
I got chills every night.
No, we had
chills every night. Late 70s.
But I mean. I had a ball because I was working at all the theater, but he also gave me license to work the clubs.
You went upscale. You worked with the theater.
Yes, I was at the theater.
At the theater.
That's right.
That's when the Playhouse was hopping.
I'm still doing it.
You got to get your black tie.
It's still playing
my
bills.
But did you work a lot with Jackie Gleason? Tell us.
Never.
Oh,
no,
I didn't.
That was Hank Meyer who worked with him.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody said, Charlie worked with
him. No, I didn't work with Gleason. I opened the theater, which was the Theater of Performing Arts.
That's the Miami Beach Auditorium.
Yes.
That was the Miami Beach Auditorium,
which became the Theater of Performing
Arts.
Now
it's Fillmore and it's all
and,
these
well, the first show there was with
Lucille Ball?
Lucy's daughter.
Lucy Arnaz.
And we played, what's his name? Jerry Herman's Mac and Mabel was the opening.
Okay.
That was the first time that Lucy and Desi reunited to come down for their opening, which was the opening night of the theater.
Wow.
And then the party was after that at the Eden Rock or the Fountain Block.
This is not the original Miami Beach Auditorium. Yeah. About when it was refurbished and reopened.
Yeah.
Right. No.
What did first open it? Do you remember?
Yes.
It was an auditorium.
Yeah. It was the original site for Miami Beach for conventions, for displays. Then they had boxing there. They had wrestling there.
Right.
You know, the kids from Beach High used to go to the wrestling. And really, it was terrific. But, you know.
The telethons were held there, too.
And Jerry, not Jerry Lewis, but
CP.
The cerebral palsy. But, you know, all that land from the north curb of Lincoln Road, what is now the Convention Center, City Hall, Miami Beach Auditorium. I still call it Miami Beach Auditorium, like Joe Robbie Stadium. You know, that was all golf course. When Carl Fisher deeded the land, it had to be maintained as a golf course. Until 1939. Then after that, they could do what they wanted with it, but of course it was city property. So what you have now is mostly city facilities on that property now. Mm-hmm.
We're running late. We're behind on this stuff. And so let's do this. We'll get right to the music.
Florida's known for our beautiful beaches, family-friendly attractions, and wonderful weather. But sometimes hurricanes and other significant weather impact this paradise, and Florida's public radio stations are there with a statewide solution for locals and visitors alike. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network provides live local storm information when needed, along with the latest information from emergency management. Complete information on FPRN is online at WLRN.org. Before, during, and after the storm, WLRN and Florida's public radio stations have you covered.
You're listening to Ted Grossman and the Night Train on 91.3 WLRN and HD1 Miami, Fort Lauderdale and the Palm Beaches, 91.5 WKWM and HD1 Marathon Key West. More information online at WLRN.org.